This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 11th of January 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 10th of January 2013, which this week has been edited by Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. No special announcements this week, though we trust that you all had a good Christmas, though you will have had the tape last week. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 11th of January, the sun rose at 08.06, that's about 8:05 in the morning, and will set at 16.23, that's 4:25 in the afternoon. Wednesday of next week, that's the 16th of January, sunrise is just about 8 o'clock, a couple of minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and sunset is at 16.30, that's 4:30 in the afternoon. If you have any problems with your memory sticks or your players, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. That's 01962 862826. And there is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet, should you need it. But please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. The main headlines this week are New Year, No Hope for Thousands of Youngsters. Signatories, We Must Get Barton Farm Right. And Traffic, Still Using City Rat Run Route. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
New Year, No Hope for Thousands of Youngsters. Young people in Hampshire are struggling more than ever to cope with daily life, according to a new report. Latest figures released by the Prince's Trust reveal that as many as 1 in 8 young people in the county, that is 13%, feel they cannot cope with day-to-day life. Other worrying statistics show that 1 in 4 young people living in Hampshire believe their prospects have been permanently damaged by the recession, while 28% grow up not having someone to talk to about their problems, and 19% feel they have no future due to the economy. Grant Wakefield Smith, director of the Samaritans in Winchester, said, "The calls that the Winchester branch have received over the last year alone shows that young people are trying to reach out and not struggle on their own. With pressures of exams, financial worries, and looking for employment, we would like our callers to contact us earlier before the problem gets even bigger for them." The Youth Index report, based on interviews with 2,136 16 to 25-year-olds across the UK, highlights how those who are not in employment, education or training, that is shortened into NEET, NEET, are significantly more likely to feel unable to cope than their peers. Also, 35% of Hampshire's young people feel down or depressed always or often, a figure that soars to 48% among the NEETs. Remember, that means not in employment, education or training. The research comes at a time when long-term unemployment is on the rise, with a 252% increase since the beginning of the recession. Unemployment in Winchester stands at around 1.3%. The Prince's Trust is one organisation working to help these young people, like Crystal Kinch from the New Forest, who was able to turn her life around thanks to its training courses. After being excluded from school without any qualifications, Crystal found herself without a job and two young children to provide for at the age of 22. But thanks to the Prince's Trust, Get Into Youth Work programme, and a lot of hard work, she completed the course and has a full-time job using her experiences to help young people. She said, "I had a really tough time trying to find work, so I know what it's like for many young people out there at the moment." Last year, the Prince's Trust worked with more than 7,400 disadvantaged young people across London and the South, giving them the skills, confidence and motivation to move into the workplace. Dermot Finch, Regional Director of the Prince's Trust in the South of England, said, "A frightening number of unemployed young people in Hampshire feel unable to cope, and it is particularly tough for those who don't have a support network in place. Life can become a demoralising downward spiral, from a challenging childhood into life as a jobless adult." Meanwhile, the County Council has announced measures to enhance the support it offers young people. Among the new measures is an extension of the Staying Put scheme to include young people leaving care aged 18 to 19 and in employment or seeking employment, and to enable them to remain in supported lodgings. Previously, this was available only to those in education or training. The council will also double the setting up home allowance for those leaving care to £2,000. Councillor Roy Perry, executive lead member for Children's Services, said, "I want to ensure our care leavers have the same opportunities as any other young people, and so want to remove any possible barriers which may prevent them accessing education, training or employment."
Signatories, we must get Barton Farm right. Letter demands rethink on scheme. More than 100 people have signed a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle demanding a thorough rethink of the Barton Farm development. Although the scheme for 2,000 homes on farmland to the north of the city has outline planning permission, the signatories argue that there is still time to influence important details. The unprecedented letter says current plans for Barton Farm are flawed and that Carla Holmes needs to be persuaded to build a development that is better integrated with the rest of the city. Signatories include retired architect Kate McIntosh, Rupert Cook, Director of Architecture PLB, I think that's PLC, should be, former City Councillors Jock MacDonald, Judith Martin, Karen Barrett and John Higgins, Hyde 900 founder Edward Fennell, transport consultant Mike Slynn, and environmental campaigner Chris Gillam, along with local councillors, architects, writers, scientists, artists and business people. One signatory, City Councillor Robert Hutchison, said, "People recognise Barton Farm is going to be built, but there is widespread public concern that it's not going to be as good as it might be. The time to think about the overall quality and design is now." He added, "The 110 or so names are the tip of an iceberg. We could have got hundreds more." The City Council is about to set up a Barton Farm Development Forum to help Carla Holmes prepare its detailed plans, which are expected later this year. In addition, a meeting has been arranged for next Wednesday, that's January the 16th, between members of the 2020 Group, a joint initiative of Winchester Action on Climate Change, also known as WINAC, and the City of Winchester Trust, and Carla to discuss the next steps. Transport campaigner Mike Slynn contends current plans do not provide a satisfactory route for cyclists and pedestrians between Barton Farm and the city centre. The plan involves diverting traffic from Andover Road through the development, and Mr. Slynn predicts this will cause conflict and greater risk of injury for residents. He says residents will be deterred from walking and cycling and encouraged to travel by car, worsening congestion and pollution. Carla originally planned to keep Andover Road, but amended the scheme to divert the road into the new estate after public consultation. Changing the diversion is highly unlikely, as it is part of the outline planning permission and altering it would involve another potentially tortuous application. Mike Emmett, Kala Land Director, said, "The road is one of the matters that has been fixed. The City Council is full square behind proposals for diverting traffic through on a new road. It would require a new planning application to change back. That is not on our agenda. We are aware the road issue has given rise to discussion and strong views for and against. We welcome dialogue and are happy to hear what people have to say. We are pleased attention is turning to detail rather than the principle." He added, "I pretty much agree with what is in the letter. Kala also wants to produce a fantastic development that everyone can be proud of. We want to produce something for the community, the city, everyone, so we can say what a fantastic developer Kala is. We do not want to miss this opportunity." Kala has also organised a public consultation for the Guildhall on Thursday, January the 31st, from midday to 7 p.m.
Traffic still using city rat run route. Road restrictions not working, say residents. City centre residents say they are angry because their streets are still being used as a rat run, despite council restrictions. Traffic conditions were imposed on the Square, Market Street and part of Great Minster Street following a City and County Council repaving project completed in 2011. After consultation with residents and businesses, traffic was limited to access and business use only, as reported in the Chronicle at the time. But residents of nearby St Swithin Street and Simmons Street claim the road is still being used as a rat run for through traffic. A County Council traffic survey of the road last May supports that claim. Of the 721 cars driving into the square from Great Minster Street on the 1st of May, 66% admitted to passing through, and 53% said they were aware of the traffic restrictions. Peter Grant, chairman of St Swithin Street and Peter's and Simmons Street Residents Association, said, "Local residents are feeling very miffed about this because we're all observing these measures, but we see at least one car per minute driving through. Pressure needs to be put on the councillors to come up with something that works and something more imaginative than signs. There are a whole heap of people driving through and breaking the law. St Swithin Street is being affected by all this traffic coming through, and a huge pothole has developed in the middle. It comes as both councils are moving ahead with plans to resurface Great Minster Street in April. But Mr Grant questioned this move if nothing is done about traffic. He added, the councils are now talking about repaving the road again, but what's the point when the amount of traffic will only damage the new surface? Residents are also concerned that cars are not observing the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, also imposed after the repaving." Bridget Carpanini of Little Minster Street said, "At the speed cars and vans come down here, someone is going to be hurt. There's a blind spot on the corner, so someone could easily be hit, and we have a lot of children walking around here." Helen Etherington, 65, of St Swithin Street, said, "If the restrictions are not going to be enforced, what is the point of having these signs? The air quality is appalling too, and with cars coming down here every minute, it will pollute the environment." Ward Councillor Ian Tate said City Council officers were looking at solutions and that councillors would be formally discussing the problem later this month. He said, "I'm sympathetic to these residents. I recognise that people are ignoring the traffic order, and if you're going to have such an order, it has to be enforced, or there's no point in it. Officers have said that they're seriously considering turning Market Lane into a two-way street so drivers do not have to come down through the square. I have also asked that we discuss the results of the County Council's traffic survey at the next town forum later in January." County Ward Councillor Brian Collins said, "It's quite clear that something needs to be done to improve adherence to these restrictions. We cannot have a full traffic ban, But as we cannot stop resident and business access, we do want we do not want to live in a toy city. There's a balance we need to address between traffic and pedestrians. If we can get it down to a trickle of cars, then I don't think people will mind. But at the moment, it's a flood. Councillor Colin backed plans to make Market Lane a two-way street, but said a physical barrier at Great Minster Street would be a last resort. A City Council spokesman said the restrictions had cut traffic in the square, despite drivers ignoring them. The spokesman said, "Some drivers are ignoring the restriction, but it has resulted in an overall reduction in vehicular movements through the area. There are also occasions when some large HGVs try to access the square via St Swithin's and Simmons Streets. We amended the advance warning signing at St Cross Road before Christmas to try to stop this happening. A report on large vehicle access to the square will go to the Council Traffic and Parking Committee next month."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death notices. Bailey, Edith Ann, known as Babs Bailey, on the 5th of January, aged 79. Brooke, Gloria Irene Brooke, on the 28th of December, aged 68. Bunny, Dawn Violet Bunny, on the 2nd of January, aged 79. Carr, Bill Carr, on the 1st of January. Chipperfield, Josephine Mary Chipperfield, on the 29th of December. Duffy, Francis Joseph Duffy, on the 31st of December, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 86. Ede, Julia, known as Julia Susan Ede, née Haynes, aged 69, on the 2nd of January. Goodman, Malcolm Goodman, on the 20th of December, aged 69. Gray, Joseph Henry Gray, on the 29th of December, the day before his 101st birthday, in Winchester Hospital. Hat, Horace Hat, on the 5th of January, aged 86. Hillier, Gordon Charles Hillier, on the 29th of December, aged 83. Dudley, Ruth Mary Dudley, Ray Nutter, at home on the 14th of December. Phillips, Graham James Phillips, at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, Southampton, on the 22nd of December, aged 83. Ralph, Margaret Ava Ralph, née Blythe, at Berwick Court Nursing Home on the 6th of January. Richmond, Dennis William Henry Richmond, at home on the 19th of December. Tibble, Rita Tibble, on the 3rd of January, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. And Whiting, Noreen Emily Whiting, on the 5th of January, 2 days before her 99th birthday. And next we have Christian comment.
This week it is written by Rosemary Baker, and she entitles it Letting God Control Our Lives. So here we are in week two of another year. Are you already on top of it? Diary planned? Holidays booked? Appointments sorted? Tax done? I had adopted a fairly low-key approach to 2013. After all, I reasoned that I am semi-retired. That was until I found I had mislaid my diary. Not my new one, but the remnants of 2012's with all those important dates at the back for this year. I searched everywhere with increasing panic. I phoned the dentist for my appointment dates, but still felt terribly out of control. At last, I found it in a safe place, but it still took me a while to settle back to my usual levels of stress. Last Sunday, I watched Songs of Praise on the television. I was very interested in hearing the interview with Shua Namuamba, wife of the Premiership footballer Fabrice Muamba, who told of how, when her husband collapsed and had a cardiac arrest on the pitch, she put it all into God's hands. She wrote this on Twitter and was amazed at not just how much calmer she became, but how her concerns were picked up as people all over the world began to pray for them. Dare one ask about your New Year resolutions? I've stopped making them, as I never succeed in keeping them. At the start of the new year, Methodists have traditionally made a distinctive resolution. The Covenant Service, often celebrated on the first Sunday of the year, is at the heart of Methodist devotion and discipleship, and their dedication in working for social justice. In the service, the Church joyfully celebrates God's gracious offer to Israel that, quote, "I will be their God, and they shall be my people." This offer is then extended beyond Israel to all women and men in Jesus Christ, who also provides the supreme example of what it is to live in such a relationship with God. That relationship primarily involves the corporate life of the community of God's people, that is, Israel, the body of Christ. It is concerned with individuals within that group. What God offers is a loving relationship. The covenant is not a contract in which God and human beings agree to provide particular goods and services for each other. It is not something that we have to do to create a relationship with God. God has freely and graciously already made it possible. Many other denominations now also have the same or similar services. It is a way to let God control us and our whole lives.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write a letter to the editor addressing it to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL.
The first letter is the one that was referred to in the second headline article earlier about the letter which was written to the Hampshire Chronicle by over 100 people demanding a rethink of the Barton Farm development. And you'll be relieved to hear that I'm not going to read out all 100 signatories. Sir, will Carla Holmes' development of Barton Farm be of the highest quality, or will it come to be seen as a missed opportunity? There are 5 main ways in which this scheme can be made fit for the 21st century. First, it needs to complement the attractiveness of central Winchester, be compact with average densities similar to those of historic cities. Minimising the amount of land used for hard surfacing will also minimise maintenance costs. Second, siting of the new school and shops and their links with surrounding neighbourhoods will be of prime importance. Evidence from recent developments is that if facilities form a link between new and existing communities on main thoroughfares, they are more likely to succeed socially and economically. Third, all new buildings should incorporate the highest standards of energy conservation and efficiency and be designed, built and oriented to maximise natural daylight, passive solar heating and integrated renewable technologies. Fourth, Barton Farm can demonstrate how walking and cycling can, as a matter of choice, become the norm for short journeys. Vehicular access and parking are important, but secondary. Internal roads could be designed as home zones, safe and convivial for children and elderly people. Finally, Andover Road should be kept as a key artery, with potential to enhance the entrance to Winchester. Millions of pounds could be better invested and road safety improved if Carla abandoned the idea to route traffic from the north into the city through the new development. With a new park and ride scheme and frequent buses, additional traffic should be minimised. Current plans need a thorough rethink. The quality of later stages must not be compromised by fundamental misjudgments in the initial plan. Carla homes need to be persuaded to build a development fully integrated with adjacent neighbourhoods and of which future generations will be proud. Winchester should settle for nothing less. And 110 people have signed that letter.
The next letter is from Phil Yates, and it's headed, "Window Dressing Not What It Was." Sir, read the photo sent in by Ken Gigg of Bastick's shop window for Christmas 1958. That was in the Hampshire Chronicle of the 20th of December. "I remember Mr. Cooper, the official window dresser of Sheriff and Ward, now Debenhams, who prided himself on some exquisite displays to suit each season, and won several awards for his efforts. Window dressing these days does not possess the flair or imagination of bygone years. Admittedly, staff have to fit in these displays with other duties, as I doubt whether even Debenhams or Marks and Spencer employ someone especially for this rather special technique. The premises occupied by Bastick's was not built to purpose. From 1897, it was the YMCA Temperance Hotel. In 1923, it became Ladies' County Club, before conversion into shop premises in the late 1940s or early 1950s. Today, it is occupied by Moss Bros, successors to Bastick's." That's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Robert Barnes asks, "Do these bishops read their Bibles?" Sir, as a Christian, I am appalled the Anglican Church has accepted homosexuals as bishops. Do those who made this decision read their Bibles, God's Word on earth? 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 9 says, "These people will not see the kingdom of God." Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed because homosexuality was rife there and warnings were ignored. Leviticus chapter 18, verse 32 is quite clear. These practices are detestable to God. Christians are there to please God, not men. The law does not change. What was abhorrent to him then is so today. Men cannot mock God, and if we continually go against his word, punishment will follow. I do not believe in persecuting homosexuals, but will try to bring them to the Lord's word so God can change them. I certainly do not think we should make them leaders of our church. I am not an Anglican as such. I believe there is one church of God and we should obey God's word. I pray he will bring sense to these leaders and change their minds. Robert Barnes, Firmstone Road, Winnall, Winchester.
Greyhound Inn, What's in a Name? Asks Simon Hunt. Sir, we have recently purchased the Greyhound Inn in Stockbridge and would love to ascertain more about the history of the building, particularly how it got its name. A little internet research documents Stocksbridge's rich racing history in the 18th and 19th centuries, but I can find very little written on the Greyhound building. Perhaps the name is linked to the racing heritage, or maybe there is a different explanation. We would really appreciate being enlightened by one of your readers. That letter is from Simon Hunt, Rudd Lane, Michelmarsh.
The next letter is written by Lisbeth Rake, who's editor of the History of the Chesil Theatre, and its head is Drama Group Celebrates 150 Years. Sir, it was so good to see the feature, Chronicle January the 3rd, on the panto Dick Whittington, presented at the Guildhall by Winchester Dramatic Society in January 1972. It is particularly apt because November 2013 is the 150th anniversary of the first recorded production by the Society. Hugh Wyeth and Giles H. Poynter, owners of two Winchester breweries, provided financial support for Macbeth, which was performed in the St. John's Rooms. Wyeth took the title role, with Poynter playing Macduff. The part of Lady Macbeth was taken by the manageress of the Sadler's Wells Theatre, Alice Marriott, who, the following year, at her own theatre, gave a celebrated performance as Hamlet. The other roles were played by local businessmen and tradesmen. As part of our celebrations, we are writing a history of the Society using our own archives, which are expertly cared for at the Hampshire Record Office and many other sources, including the Hampshire Chronicle. Happily, many of those mentioned in the article are still with the Winchester Dramatic Society, now better known as the Chesil Theatre, after the building we took over and converted in the 1960s. We would be interested to hear from any readers who were involved in the Society's activities or may have parents or grandparents who were members. Information on the years 1902 to 1932 would be most welcome, as we have very few records of that period. Please contact chesilinfo@chesiltheatre.org.uk or call our archivist, Flavia Bateson, on 01962 855 544. Say it again, 01962 855 544. And that letter was written by Elizabeth Rake of Providence Cottage, Upsombourne, Stockbridge.
Why 20-mile-per-hour zones will cost votes, says Peter Stewart. Sir, in 1903, Parliament imposed a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit across Britain. A century later, the EU's 20-miles-per-hour, or 30 kilometres per hour, initiative is already underway in Britain's built-up areas. Angry voters are discovering it's no use trying to blame Parliament. MPs are denying all blame and telling irate voters that the responsibility for 20-mile-per-hour zones rests with local councillors. Voila! Councillors have walked into a trap. No wonder the government was so keen to devolve responsibility. Once voters make the link with speed cameras, a backlash will follow. The winners will be independent candidates opposing 20-mile-per-hour zones, while mainstream party councillors promoting this politically suicidal EU scheme will learn the hard way that 20-mile-per-hour zones cost votes. Peter Stewart, Beaver Drive, Bishopstoke.
Mike Rowe says that topics for 2013 will be just the same. Sir, while considering New Year resolutions, I started to guess what topics will feature in this page this year. It's a near certainty they will be no different. Congestion at Winnell, complaints about planning permissions, and possible green remedies for global warming. Winnell is my particular bugbear, but disastrous planning 20 years ago has left us with a situation which would take many millions of pounds to correct. This won't happen in the foreseeable future, and throwing a few pounds at it can do no more than alleviate an unsatisfactory situation. Planning permissions will always be controversial and will only add to the congestion on an outdated road infrastructure which can't be improved without starting again. The question of global warming is highly topical, and there will always be at least two sides to the question. I respect those who offer solutions, but believe that they merely divert attention from the fact that global warming is likely to be happening through a natural cycle which is beyond the ability of man to correct or combat. Witness the present changes in weather. Modest changes to speed limits, parking, exchanging cars for cycles, or using windmills will have no noticeable effect, but merely add to the minor miseries of life. Other readers will have their own pet topics, and if nothing else, writing them down in fewer than 350 words does get them off one's chest at the start of a new year. So writes Mike Rowe, King's Close, Kingsworthy.
Jock MacDonald writes the next letter, which is headed "Wind and Solar Are the Best Stopgaps." Sir, Douglas Paterson is right about the worrying increase in Germany of coal-powered electricity generation to back up solar and wind power. Letters January the 3rd. The sudden volte-face on nuclear energy in that country is the primary cause, even if fracking in America is pulling down the international price of oil and coal. He is also right that we need locally based schemes. But we are where we are. In England, not in Germany, with wind and solar technologies the best stopgaps before other technologies are worked up, and with gas and nuclear power, not a new German emphasis on coal to back them up. Those wind turbines and solar panels won't be there for more than 25 years at the most, let alone forever. Douglas Paterson and I need to think beyond the tiny window of our lives. Of course, Hampshire countryside is priceless, as is almost any countryside in the rest of the British Isles, but I do find it ironic that in one of the financially richest counties, where much money is no doubt invested in international stock markets and hedge funds to support a rural lifestyle, that Douglas Paterson should be so incensed by EDF's desire to make money by erecting wind turbines. That's from Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Fulford, Winchester.
Bob Whitchurch says, arguments aren't based on reality. Sir, reluctantly, I feel I need to reply yet again to your correspondence in my support of onshore wind turbines and respond to the weak and simplistic arguments, as seen in the letters to the January the 3rd paper. To talk of wind turbines marching across the Hampshire landscape is the stuff of bad dreams and not based on reality. Nor is it rational to suppose that wind turbines represent a futile sacrifice of the landscape or a loss of undeveloped countryside. This is emotive language. I might as well remind your correspondents of the much greater future loss to our descendants in this and later centuries if we do not halt climate change by whatever means we can. Putting aside the matter of coal, which has no direct relevance, I would like to rebut the view that renewables obligation certificates, known as ROCs, represent a direct financial subsidy to generators. By law, all licensed electricity suppliers are obliged to supply an ever-increasing proportion of electricity from renewable sources. To underpin this requirement, the government issues ROCs to electricity generators who sell them to suppliers, so as to encourage the badly needed growth of renewable energy sources. The price of ROCs is set by a market mechanism, rather than by government. Thus, the ROC scheme is far more complex than a direct subsidy, and suppliers can, in fact, lose money if they fail to meet their obligation. Most importantly, ROCs are only issued for power actually generated. If a wind farm produces little or no output, its operators receive little or no ROCs. DECC says the scheme cost each household about £20 in 2011. The much larger increases in domestic energy bills mostly result from relentless increases in fossil fuel prices. As for comments implying that energy companies only want to make money, isn't that what companies are supposed to do? Bob Whitmarsh, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
Wind farms must keep their distance, so writes Marcus Stanton. Sir, given the increasing number of wind farm proposals, is it not time for the Hampshire County Council to consider a minimum separation distance between dwellings and wind turbines? It is clearly not right to build a 150-metre turbine next to someone's house, and thus a very fair question is, how near to a house should a turbine be allowed? Following the approach taken by many other councils, I would have thought a separation based on the height of a turbine would be highly reasonable. I suggest a 2 to 3 kilometre separation distance for turbines in the 100-metre to 150-metre range. That letter is from Marcus Stanton, Norton Manor Lane, Sutton Scotney.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to items of historical interest, and we have items from 75, 50 and 25 years ago.
Yes, first of all, we have exciting news from 75 years ago. At the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, a system has been installed whereby the minimum of delay will be incurred whenever urgent medical attention is required. Every department is connected by telephone to the main hall, so no great delay has resulted when one of the resident medical officers is urgently required.
50 years ago, 1963. Although an appeal against the refusal of immediate planning permission for a large housing estate at Badger Farms and Cross has been dismissed by the Minister of Housing, the developers will have another chance to bring the project forward. A ministry letter states that the developers have objected to the programming of the project after 1971 is submitted, in the submitted review town map for Winchester, and an inquiry will be held next month to hear representations on all objections.
This piece is from 25 years ago, 1988. Part of Winchester's main shopping street is likely to be among short-term parking areas closed off when the Brooks development opens in 1990. The council plans to shut High Street between Colebrook Street and Market Street, where the pedestrian precinct currently begins. If the idea is adopted, the street will be open only to buses, taxis, disabled vehicles and loading vehicles. The restriction would apply all day and restrict most private cars from the area.
Next, we have the editorial comment, chronicle comment, and that will be followed by first person.
Yes, the comment is headed "Repaying Their Debts to Society." Getting people to give something back to society after wrongdoing was the aim of community service when it was set up. Four decades and more than 2 million hours of community projects later, and offenders are still being ordered to pay something back to the community for their crimes, as our news feature on page 6 shows. The aim of the scheme, now called Community Payback, was to deprive offenders not of liberty but of leisure, and that reparation is a means of righting their wrongs. But it's not just about clearing churchyards of leaves or repainting walls daubed with graffiti. Offenders are taught new practical skills and encouraged to develop a stronger work ethic, which in turn helps reduce the risk of reoffending. It's about teaching them to be responsible human beings and to realise the consequences of their actions. On that subject, perhaps more should be made of the restorative justice process, where, in certain circumstances, those who have committed crimes are brought face to face with their victims. It gives victims the chance to tell offenders the real impact of their crimes, and that, for every crime, someone, somewhere, suffers the consequences.
The news report referred to in that editorial comment will be read immediately after First Person.
First Person this week is written by Ron Allison, and he entitles it, Old at 58? What a nonsense. So, how is it going so far, this year of 2013? How are you feeling? How old are you feeling? What age group do you now think you are occupying? I ask these perhaps somewhat impertinent questions because of something that caught my eye over the weekend. As reported in the Sunday Times, the Department for Work and Pensions has come up with some age-related statistics. Apparently, the average woman feels she has reached old age when she hits 60 years, 4 months and 2 weeks old, while men consider themselves to be elderly at 58. We stop thinking of ourselves as young, it is said, when we reach 40 years, 8 months and 2 weeks. Now, those figures are, of course, averages, and since any evidence I gathered would be purely anecdotal and based on what, or rather who, I see around me, I cannot really argue with them. Looking back, though, I certainly don't recall declaring myself old when I was even 60. Maybe I did admit I was no longer a youngster when I reached the 40 mark, but that was only to allow me to move into a very elastic period I accepted as middle age. It is this time, I guess, that many of us do view as lasting for as long as our health and other factors will allow it. I certainly believe it would be very much in our minds how long we take to pass through into the next stage. What is certain is that our life expectancy is rising year on year, and that it will not be long before about a quarter of our population will be of pensionable age. Now, there is a situation already taxing our politicians, not least because the grey vote will become increasingly crucial in elections to come. But give them credit for genuinely worrying about us and how we will be cared for and by whom and at what cost. Others are taking notice too, including filmmakers. A new release, Quartet, is well worth seeing, if only for the quality of the acting. Maggie Smith, not in Downton mode, Tom Courtney, Pauline Collins and Billy Connolly play former opera singers who find themselves in a retirement home for musicians. Shortage of cash means it is threatened with closure, and, well, no, I leave you to check out what happens. Not a demanding film, but thoroughly enjoyable and a good start for Dustin Hoffman, making his debut as a director. He definitely graduates. Sorry. The acting, particularly that of Tom Courtney, is a joy. Other films around also pay heed to those of us getting on a bit. You could even say the latest Bond epic, Skyfall, does so, though again, I don't want to give anything away. But don't worry, as we age, we will be noticed.
Now we have the news report, which is referred to in the Chronicle editorial item. Repaying their debts to society. Raking leaves into piles from around graves in a wet and cold churchyard is not what David Patience would call an easy time. For the next 7 hours, this is what he and 8 other convicted criminals will be doing as they complete their probation orders through the community payback programme. The 35-year-old was one of 3,000 offenders who last year were given community orders and who carried out some 245,000 hours of unpaid work in the community through a variety of projects. That equates to £1.5 million of free labour. Today, an overgrown churchyard in Eastleigh is being cleared, whilst the previous week teams repainted graffiti-daubed walls. Others have completed refits on tall ships, whilst regular projects include clearing fly tippers' rubbish and improving neighbourhoods by revamping old buildings and knocking down eyesores. The alternative would be prison. By his own admission, David has been there and done that. He says the community payback is a much more valuable way for him to spend his time. He said, "It is easy time in prison. I was there for 5 months and I just sat around drinking coffee and smoking. There isn't much to do. You can play on PlayStations or watch television, but to be honest, it's just really boring. I absolutely begged the judge to give me a chance on probation. I wanted to be out there doing something. This isn't easy, especially on a day like today. It's hard work." David was given his chance after admitting a charge of actual bodily harm for which he was handed 100 hours unpaid work rather than be sent back to prison. The unemployed plasterer said the skills he is using and learning will help prepare him to get back into the world of work. He said, "You get out of the habit of getting up and having a purpose. This has got me back into that routine. I have to cycle for 3 miles to get to the pickup point and then work all day. At the end of it, I can say I have done something with my day, and working with other people helps my confidence and so helps me get back into work. I know it's about me being punished, which it is, but at the same time it's helping me to stay out of trouble." Today he is working alongside Gundars, a 22-year-old Latvian who was given 160 hours to complete after he admitted a fray. He works 6 days a week in a supermarket, so has to fit his unpaid work around that. "I do not enjoy it, but I know it was the punishment for what I did, and I certainly won't be doing it again," he says. "I work hard all week, so this is a punishment to have this on top of that. I think it's a good way to punish people who commit crimes that are not so serious, and a way of helping the community." It was with precisely that hope that community service, as it was then known, was set up 40 years ago. For the first time, offenders in Hampshire and on the Isle of Wight were faced with a new type of sentence. 4 decades and more than 2 million hours of community projects later, and offenders are still being ordered to pay something back to the community for their crimes. The aim of the scheme was to deprive offenders not of liberty, but of leisure, and that reparation is a means of righting their wrongs. Community payback manager Kelly Taggart said, "The ethos of community payback is about making offenders understand the impact of their crimes and to pay something back to the community through hard work and loss of their personal time." During their time on community payback, offenders involved in groups will be supervised and taught new practical skills and are encouraged to develop a stronger work ethic, which in turn helps reduce the risk of reoffending.
Gang targeting working dogs. Police warning over thefts. An organised gang of criminals are targeting dogs in villages across Hampshire, a senior police officer has warned. Officers are stepping up patrols and have been visiting the owners of stolen canines and liaising with gamekeepers in rural areas as they urge people to be vigilant. It comes as 3 Cocker Spaniels have been stolen in central Hampshire since December the 30th at Bullington and Oslebury near Winchester. In November, 2 English Springer Spaniels were stolen from their home in Holbury, while another dog was taken from its family in Thornhill, who were later offered a ransom for their pet dog's safe return before it was taken to an animal rescue centre. There have also been reports of men behaving suspiciously close to kennels at Beauworth and Ovington, both near Alresford, on December the 30th and 31st. Police believe the incidents are linked to the thefts. Chief Inspector Simon Dodd said, "There appears to be a group of organised individuals out there specifically targeting working dogs. We've had some really useful information given to us from members of the public, and we would urge them to continue doing so. We would also ask people to be extra vigilant and also use common sense if you're buying a dog."
Energy network could cut emissions and costs. Major public institutions in Winchester, like the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, the university, the prison and county council, could be linked up to form an energy network, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. The green scheme would involve pumping hot water and heat through a network of underground pipes to public buildings. Instead of individual boilers, there would be one central combined heat and power plant. County chiefs say benefits include reducing carbon emissions by about 30% and cheaper energy bills. The County Council's Cabinet has approved employing a project manager to develop the business case and set up an energy services company, called ESCO, to run the scheme. The aim is to get a Winchester District Energy Network, known as DEN, D-E-N, running within 2 or 3 years at an estimated cost of between £4 and £7 million. Future expansion plans may allow Winchester College, River Park Leisure Centre, City Council offices and shops in the redeveloped Silver Hill to be connected. The move comes at a time when Tory county chiefs have been criticised for a blanket ban on wind farms on council land. Plans for a district energy network have been welcomed by Winchester Friends of the Earth. Green campaigner Chris Gillam said, "It does not offset the county council's opposition to wind power, but it is a good move. Anything that shares heat instead of lots of individually heated buildings has to be a good thing, so long as losses in transferring heat among them are not large." A feasibility study was jointly commissioned by the county and city council from consultants Rolton in 2010, followed by a second report from consultants Mace on the technical and financial aspects. The proposals include a scheme in the west of the city, connecting the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester Prison and University of Winchester. And a second city scheme focuses on the county council's buildings at the castle complex, saving up to £90,000 a year. This city scheme could potentially include Winchester College and city council buildings, including the River Park Leisure Centre, as well as Silver Hill. A county council report said an informal stakeholder group had been set up, including the hospital, university, prison, college and city council. More work has to be done on the technical and financial feasibility of the city scheme.
Staff act quickly to douse flames. Quick-thinking staff at a Winchester restaurant stopped what could have developed into a major blaze last week. Two workers at the Bengal Sage acted swiftly to prevent an alleged arson attack developing into a full-scale fire. Mohammed Ahmed and Shahid Rahman Khan used buckets of water to douse a fire started in a bin at the back of the St George's Street restaurant on New Year's Day. Mr Ahmed, 22, a waiter of Wolford Close, Stanmore, said he was on his way to work when he came across the incident. He said, "I saw this gentleman in the car park at one of the bins and I could smell smoke and could see it coming out the bin. As I ran back to the restaurant, I could see the bin was on fire. I ran inside and called the chef out and together we grabbed buckets of water and soon had the fire out." Colleague Mr Khan, 42, of Longfield Road, Winnell, added, "I was focusing on cooking curries, Then I smelt smoke and Mohammed alerted me, so we went straight out. I had to balance putting out the fire with the cooking, so it's proof I can multitask. The incident was the last of three alleged arsons in the city, as the doors of the deanery at Winchester Cathedral and Phase 8 clothes shop in the High Street were also set alight, with the latter suffering serious damage. Mr. Ahmed added, "We were lucky as we were in the right place at the right time, or it could have been very dangerous." Meanwhile, it is unknown when the deanery bookshop will reopen after the fire, but Annabel Boys, Receiver General at Winchester Cathedral, said the priority was the historic porch. Assessment was underway and conservation work had commenced, she added. A spokesman for Phase 8 said it was unclear when the shop would reopen.
Sewage lorry overturns. A lorry carrying 8,000 litres of liquid sewage overturned in a Hampshire village. Fire crews battled to stop diesel from the stricken vehicle leaking into Leckford Lane in Stockbridge. Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service crews from Andover, Stockbridge and Eastleigh used containers to stop more than 100 litres of fuel getting into the drains. No sewage escaped from the vehicle. The driver was taken to hospital by ambulance after the accident, which happened shortly after noon on Monday.
Counting them in two by two. They're counting them in by two, from the smallest beetle to the tallest giraffe. Keepers at Winchester's Marwell Wildlife were busy counting the animals for one of the strangest stock takes. All creatures, great and small, at the zoo near Colden Common have to be counted for their annual audit. Once the keepers have the final totals, a registrar will produce a report showing how many animals have been born or died or moved in or out within the past year, as well as how many animals currently live there. Although the report is as accurate as it can be, some of the smallest creatures, such as ants, are impossible to count, and keepers have to estimate how many there are from their knowledge of the species. Every zoo in the country has to count their animals every year and produce a report as part of their licence. As well as being able to show inspectors the report, it also helps keepers understand more about how well breeding programmes are working and how much money is likely to be spent on food, bedding and medicine throughout the next year. More than 1,700 animals across 188 species live at the zoo, including 32 penguins, 12 giraffes, and 3 rhinos. Marwell saw a number of new arrivals last year, including 2 baby giraffes called Ruby and Olympia, 2 or 3 penguins, and 5 scimitar-horned oryx, which are very rare. The rarest species at the zoo are Partula snails, of which Marwell has nearly half the world's population. John Pullen, curator of mammals at Marwell, said, "I think for most of the keepers it's quite enjoyable, but there are a couple of creatures that are a lot harder to count, like the Seba's bats and leafcutter ants." Dr. Miranda Stevenson is the executive director of BIAZA, which I think is something to do with British and Incorporation of Zoo Animals, the national preventional body offering advice and guidance on all aspects of zoo management. She said, "The annual stock take is a big job, so January is a busy time of year for many zoos across the UK. It may be easy to count 2 tigers, but more patience is required when it comes to penguins, which all look similar, or playful meerkats that won't stand still. The records are given to local authorities who issue and renew licenses for zoos and also help other zoos to manage international breeding and conservation programs." And there is a coloured photograph of one of the keepers, a lady called Debbie Pearson, who is counting the giraffes, and I can see what looks must be the mother giraffe, and two little ones peering over the top of the pen beside her.
Last hurdle falls to pave way for new superstore. Sainsbury's to start Bishop's Waltham build this summer. A supermarket giant can finally start building a controversial store in a Hampshire town. The way now appears clear for Sainsbury's to begin development of the store in Bishop's Waltham, which was halted after objection was made to proposals to close a section of road. A government planning inspection has now ruled that shutting part of Station Road to traffic should be allowed following a one-day public inquiry in October. Sainsbury's said it was pleased at the decision and expects building work to begin this summer. The scheme on the Abbey Mill business site in Station Road, which will create 350 jobs, had split opinion in the Bishop's Waltham community, but got planning permission back in 2011. One vocal critic was Britain's Got Talent star Amanda Holden, who grew up in the town. The Sainsbury's opposed Bishop's Waltham Action Group, that's BWAG, Chairman Tony Kippenberger, said that the guidelines of the inquiry were so tight that many of their concerns were not admissible. "We're not aware of anything else that would stop them," he said. "There's a sense of resignation that it will now go ahead. Our attention turns to doing everything we can to sustain the high street." Former chairman Henry Fryer added, "My view is people in the village recognise that Sainsbury's will now build a supermarket there, and we will go along with that because the time for protest is past. Those who formed the group were concerned that Sainsbury's coming would have a negative impact on independent shops. We must work hard to make sure that doesn't happen and support the individual retailers." He said he was not aware of any scope to make further objections or appeals. "We have been drinking in the Last Chance Saloon," he said, "and we're now going to head off to another bar." John Hayter from Bishop's Waltham, who objected to the measures and spoke at the inquiry, said he was disappointed by the decision but did not plan to pursue it further. He added that the road would now be a cul-de-sac and difficult to turn around on. Peter Watson, chairman of the Bishop's Waltham Another View group, which supported the Sainsbury's application, said, "We're absolutely delighted that finally something's going to happen. In our view, common sense has prevailed. At the end of the day, what's wrong with some healthy competition?" He said it would also bring with it a new doctor's surgery.
A&E scores highly in patient survey. Visitors to hospital emergency departments in Winchester and Basingstoke have given positive ratings in a national accident and emergency department survey. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust performed better than most other trusts in several areas and was not rated as worse than other trusts in any area. Overall, users of the Trust's emergency departments at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital rated their experience, the respect they were shown and the dignity they were treated with as better than those in other trusts. High scores were received for the way in which doctors and nurses interacted with patients and their families. Patients said that doctors and nurses had not talked about them as if they were not there, that they were involved in decisions about treatment, and that family members had enough opportunities to speak to a doctor. Consistency of communication also rated highly, with patients feeling that they did not get mixed messages from the staff about their care. One improvement that had been made is the introduction of a revised triage system in the emergency departments. Dr. John Hitchkin, Hampshire Hospital's Clinical Director for Unscheduled Care, said, "Emergency departments operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we see people in what can be highly stressful situations. High quality patient care is at the heart of everything we do, and like all our hospital teams, my staff are caring and committed to doing their best for patients every day. To see this reflected in those results is extremely pleasing.
New police chief wants your views. Residents in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight are being asked for their views on policing in the first major public consultation exercise by the new Police and Crime Commissioner. Simon Hayes is writing his first police and crime plan since taking office, setting out how he will ensure there is an efficient and effective police service for the two counties. To ensure that targets he sets reflect the public's views, he has launched an online survey. He said, "When I was elected, I made a commitment to be the voice of the people. I spend much of my time meeting community representatives, but I want the public to send views and opinions directly to me. When I publish the plan and set the policing element of the council tax, I want my decisions to represent the thoughts of as many people as possible. So I would strongly encourage people to complete the survey." Mr. Hayes, who faces some major decisions in the coming months with the appointment of a new police constable and tough financial pressures, added, "The public expects more from our police service, but there is only a limited amount of money in the pot to spend. Could the police be doing more in some areas? If so, would people be prepared to pay for it through an increase in the council tax? Or, if we need to make cuts to ensure people don't pay more, where can we make savings?" The survey will end at midday on January the 18th. For hard copies, contact the Commissioner's office on 01962 871 595. I'll repeat that. 01962 871 595.
New state-of-the-art outpatients department opens. Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital has welcomed its first patients to a new and improved outpatients department. The hospital opened the £3.3 million department last week, the culmination of 2 years' work on the project. Staff were delighted to see the department in Burrell Wing finally in use. Diane Blanchard, Operations Director for Family and Clinical Support, said, "This is a modern, state-of-the-art development designed around patients' needs. We have had a lot of input from patients around their experiences, and we have kept what's important to them in the design. I must thank all the staff who worked so hard to make sure this would be ready, particularly our housekeeping staff, who more or less gave up their Christmas holidays. All clinics from the previous outpatient building in Rumsey Road have moved into the new wing, along with audiology and ear, nose and throat clinics." Outpatients manager James Montgomery added, "What we used to have in Rumsey Road was a good building for its time, but it was past its sell-by date for modern use. The main thing for us was to have a new building that was fit for purpose and improved the patient experience. The aim is to make it inviting, welcoming, and accessible for patients to get to their appointments more easily. New features include high-tech self-check-in machines and information screens, whilst the department also has a buggy to transport people with mobility problems to and from their cars. Jason Richardson was one of the first patients to try out the new services, saying it was a big improvement. Mr. Richardson, 46, of Westfield Road, Chandler's Ford, said, "The new building is excellent and is a big upgrade on the old building. I think it will give people more confidence when coming in, and it is a lot easier to find on site." The project was funded by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which took over the RHCH last January.
Ellie up for an honour. A Winchester volunteer has been nominated for an award for her work with a veterinary charity. Ellie Luckett, 28, has been shortlisted in the PDSA's annual volunteer awards for her outstanding commitment. Jodie Clark, who put her up for the award, said, "When Ellie first started with us, she lacked a little bit of confidence, but over time, this has improved dramatically, and she is more than capable to crack on with any task we ask her to do." PDSA provides free veterinary treatment to the sick and injured pets of people in need. Staff at its National Volunteering Centre in Hyde Street, Winchester, handle inquiries from the public, coordinate volunteer placements nationwide, and support staff in all aspects of volunteer management. Animal lover Ellie decided to volunteer after suffering health problems. "The best bit about volunteering is helping sick and injured pets by helping the team, however I can, freeing their time for other things. I enjoy learning new skills, taking part in research projects, and the opportunities for volunteer development. The PDSA Volunteer Awards are now in their 10th year, and the winners will be announced shortly."
Helen to tackle Great Wall for charity. Trekking across the Great Wall of China has always been a dream for Colden Common mother of two, Helen Connell. But now the 41-year-old is planning to fulfil her dream and to raise money for a cause close to her heart. She is embarking on her adventure of a lifetime this September by joining a 10-day trip organised by Discover Adventure, a specialist in worldwide trekking. Her aim is to raise £3,250 for Parkinson's UK, a leading charity funding research into the causes and support for sufferers of the disease, which affects one in every 500. There is currently no cure for Parkinson's. Helen's mother was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2003. Symptoms can include rigidity, slowness of movement and tremors, making it difficult to walk or carry out simple tasks such as washing and dressing. Helen has signed up to walk about 80 miles along the Great Wall of China, accompanied by a friend and 30 others who are all raising money for their chosen charities. Helen said, "Because it was my 40th birthday last year, it made me determined to do it even more, and Parkinson's UK seemed a worthy cause to support." The part-time pharmacy dispensing assistant said her two teenage children, Matthew and Charlotte, were a bit shocked at her adventurousness, although pleased for her. Helen said, "I like walking, but I've never done something like this before." But she is already in training with long weekend walks and regular trips to her local gym.
Tracy goes from barmaid to boss. A former barmaid is now managing the pub where she was taught the trade. Tracy Haynes and her partner Steve Kemp have taken over the John O'Gaunt Inn at Horsebridge near King's Somborne, and in so doing are keeping their best friend's pub dream alive. Steve and Tracy bought the lease from Tony Simmons, who was forced to quit through ill health. Tony led a campaign to save the pub after it had closed and seemed likely to be turned into housing. She organised locals to help her refurbish the pub and reopened it last March. But when she was unable to continue at the pub, they were asked to take over. Tracy, 49, who had been barmaid at the pub about 30 years ago when it was called the Railway Inn, was thrilled with the opportunity. Tracy said, "I'm really enjoying it. I first worked here when the name changed from the Railway Inn to the John O'Gaunt in 1981. I came back to work here again a couple of months ago to help Tony out, but now I'm here to stay. There's a lot more to do and think about than when I was a barmaid."
£6 million highways boost. Hampshire County Council has welcomed a £6 million boost from the government for highways improvements. The funds will be used for Operation Resilience, a council programme to strengthen roads and footways. So far, the council has improved more than 150 miles of highways against extreme weather conditions and increasing traffic. The extra money is in addition to the £60 million per year received for general highways maintenance and will be split over the next two financial years. Councillor Mel Kendall, Deputy Leader and Executive Member for Environment and Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, "Highways maintenance is one of our top priorities. Over 3 years ago, we made a commitment to invest in a multi-million pound long-term strategy with Operation Resilience and refurbish our highway infrastructure."
Rail fares rise by 4.2%. Rail commuters in Winchester returned to work in their masses this week with the news that the cost of their annual season tickets to London would be £184 more expensive. The 4.2% rise, less than it had been feared, means that the cost of getting to London is now £4,556 per annum. It was feared prices would rise nationally by an average of 6.2%, but instead rose by around 4%. It comes as Network Rail announced plans on Tuesday to spend £1 billion on improvements in the south between 2014 and 2019, including £30 million on track renewals in the Southampton area. A spokesman for Network Rail confirmed that this would include track and infrastructure improvements at Winchester, Mitchell Dever and Shawford stations. Commuters travelling between Hampshire and London are being promised more and reliable services as a result of the works, which includes a £300 million project to increase capacity at Waterloo Station. The overhaul, to be implemented by the Network Rail and South West Trains Alliance, will see tracks renewed, more of the railway electrified, signalling enhanced, money spent on bridges and tunnels and improved buildings, as well as new machinery. But commuters will still feel the pinch over the next few years, as it is predicted Winchester season tickets could cost as much as £5,647 a year by 2015.
Anne in the Frame. A Winchester photographer has been awarded a place on the Southern Photographic Federation's Roll of Honour. The federation, which covers some 67 clubs in the region, makes the award upon nomination by the club concerned to recognise and show appreciation for dedicated and long service to club photography. Anne Ruffle has been a member of Winchester Photographic Society for 30 years, and in that time has held various roles, including two terms as president. She masterminded a successful national lottery application and has always supported federation events. She is a keen advocate of club photography, entering competitions both within the club and the federation, and has achieved two distinctions, a diploma with the Photographic Alliance of Great Britain and the associateship of the Royal Photographic Society. Anne is also publicity officer for the club's annual exhibition, which will be holding its 80th show this April at City Space in Winchester Discovery Centre. The society meets every Tuesday at the Discovery Centre, and new members are always welcome.
3,000 homes in districts set to have child benefit cut. Winchester will be hit harder than anywhere else in Hampshire under new cuts to child benefit. Almost 3,000 letters have been sent out to households to warn them they will be losing out, more than three times the number sent to Southampton parents. The cuts, which come into force this week, are proving controversial, with Labour City Councillor Chris Pines branding the move absolutely appalling. According to figures published in Parliament, 2,950 letters will be sent to people in Winchester, compared to 1,340 in New Forest East and 1,150 in New Forest West. The Labour-held Southampton Itchen 390 went out, with 590 letters sent in Southampton Test. In total, around 15,000 letters have been sent to homes in the South, but the true number affected is much higher, as many families have not yet been warned, with ministers relying on an awareness campaign to keep people informed. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine, who will himself be affected, called it ridiculous that he had still not received a letter. "I didn't see the publicity, and if I missed it, there's a pretty good chance that other people did too," Mr. Brine said. "Personally, I would have liked to see a more imaginative solution around this policy, and have told the Prime Minister as much. What we are left with, I am afraid, is a blunt instrument which feels unfair and penalises many stay-at-home mums. I will be lobbying for this to be fully reviewed at the time of the next spending review." Councillor Pines said, "It's absolutely appalling, and it's typical that they hit those who can least afford to fight back. We know a whole heap of families locally that will lose money. A lot of families will lose out. Child benefit is worth £20.30 a week for the oldest or only child, and £13.40 a week for other children. Any household where one parent earns more than £50,000 will no longer be entitled to the full amount, and it will be removed entirely where one earns £60,000 or above."
Festival organiser warned over future licence breaches. Winchester civic chiefs have ruled out formal action against Boomtown Festival for breaches of licensing conditions. But landowner Peveril Bruce and festival directors have been warned further breaches could result in prosecution and a review of their licence. The festival at Matterley Bowl last August generated several noise complaints and allegations that the premises licence held by Mr. Bruce had been breached. Council officers investigated and said some minor technical conditions were broken, but they caused no problems or danger to the public at the event. Noise conditions were imposed in the licence and set a maximum level for music off-site. These limits were breached, although the organisers lowered the volume when the breaches became apparent. One factor last year was the wind, which unusually changed direction, pushing the music noise towards Winchester. Another allegation was that music carried on after midnight on the Sunday. The organisers claimed this was incidental music which is not licensable. The music at that time resulted in one complaint being received. In a statement, the council said it had to consider whether there was a realistic prospect of securing convictions and if it was in the public interest to prosecute. Taking into account the evidence, the mitigating circumstances, and the level of penalty which was likely to be imposed, it was decided that prosecution was not appropriate. John Mile, licensing manager, said, "The council takes the licensing of events very seriously to ensure that they are safe for attendees and also do not impact too negatively on local residents. We work with license holders and events promoters to evaluate events and ensure conditions are being met, and we will take formal action where appropriate."
Spotlight on World of King Alfred. Winchester students have been learning about the Anglo-Saxon world of King Alfred. Judith Pope, part of the education team at Winchester Cathedral, visited Peter Simmons College recently to talk to a group of A-level English students about her research into 10th century Winchester. Ms. Pope examined the city's Benedictine community, exploring the life of a monk called Aelfric. According to her research, Aelfric shared King Alfred's belief in the value of education and the need to spread it, and the monk was considered a visionary of his time, using role play to make lessons more interesting. The lecture marked the beginning of a series of weekly presentations to Peter Simmons' English students to help broaden their knowledge. Head of English Literature, Dr. Paul Davies, said, "We are very grateful to Judith for sharing her research. Many students and staff will now be visiting the cathedral to find out more."
Stamp of approval for Austin Classic. It's the ultimate love story that will ensure that added sprinkle of romance for Valentine's cards sent next month. Images from the timeless classic Pride and Prejudice will adorn stamps throughout the month of February as Hampshire novelist Jane Austen is honoured by the Royal Mail. The set of six stamps will see scenes from six of Austen's iconic novels immortalised for keen collectors as the Royal Mail celebrates the very best of British. Austen, who lived in Steventon, north of Winchester, before moving to College Street, Winchester, in her final days, was chosen for the honour to mark 200 years of her best-known tale of love between Mr. Darcy and Miss Bennet. But the Royal Mail is keeping the Pride and Prejudice design a closely guarded secret until February, instead choosing to reveal the stamp depicting a scene from Emma as a taster. Other icons of Britishness honoured include Doctor Who, the Merchant Navy, and the London Underground, which kicked off the special series yesterday, that's Wednesday, to mark the 150th anniversary of the first underground railway in the world.
New procedure for cancer treatment. A pioneering trial in Hampshire has found a quicker way to treat blood cancer patients. A new injection has been proven to treat patients with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma within 5 minutes, instead of the usual 2 hours that it currently takes for an intravenous infusion to get to work. It uses the same drug as before, but this new way of administrating the drug means patients have to spend less time in hospital and medics can treat many more patients. The trial, of which part was carried out at the University of Southampton, revealed that the injection of the drug, rituximab, worked just as effectively as the traditional treatment.
Pupils score as new playground equipment unveiled. Teenagers have secured new sports equipment after teaming up with the parish council. Littleton and Harestock parish councillors unveiled a new £7,500 Melty sports area for the Bradley Road playground in Harestock on Tuesday. The parish council launched the project after receiving a deputation from the school council at the nearby Henry Beaufort Secondary during the summer. The galvanised steel structure comprises a basketball hoop, football goal and cricket stumps. Parish councillor Rod Warren said, "This was suggested as something that would be useful for older children and was in response to the pupils from Henry Beaufort who came to see us. We thought this would be an appropriate piece of equipment as it offers football, cricket and basketball, and we are very pleased with it." School council member Becky Hemming, 13, said, "There were lots of groups of children hanging around here, not doing anything, so we thought it would be good to get something productive for them to do." PE teacher Fran Arnold added, "It's been lovely working with the parish council and that they have included this age group because we do sometimes feel they're forgotten." The new equipment was funded through developers' contributions from the parish's Open Spaces Fund.
MP visits flood risks. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury has been touring areas of his constituency that are at risk of flooding. Mr. Hollingbury met residents, parish councillors and flood action groups last Saturday morning in Rowlands Castle, Finchdean and Hambledon. His visit comes in the wake of a Met Office announcement that 2012 was the second wettest year since records began. In Hambledon, the sewers have struggled to cope, resulting in flooded fields, roads and paths, although no homes have yet been affected. I met local people and experts in the areas to gauge the size of the problem and see if there's anything I can do to help, Mr. Hardenbury said.
Cash for causes. Charities and groups in the Winchester district are further set to benefit from the city's annual bonfire night fundraiser. Winchester Roundtable has already started to allocate funding from the £30,000 raised last November to worthy causes in the area. But now, £5,000 of the pounds of the funds raised have been allocated to the Cash for Causes scheme, run in conjunction with the Hampshire Chronicle. Applications from charitable and non-profit-making groups can be made to Winchester Roundtable by filling in a coupon, which will be published on the community news page in the Hampshire Chronicle over the next 7 weeks. Donations will typically be in the region of £500.
Lambing Weekend. Sparsholt College in Winchester is inviting families to learn more about the work of a shepherd at its lambing weekend between 9:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. on January the 26th and 27th. There will be farming activities, demonstrations and displays, including puzzles, sculpture, milking and dog agility demonstrations. Tickets are £15 for a family, £5 for adults and £3 for children, and can be purchased on the day. Pregnant women are advised not to attend, and dogs are not allowed. For more information, contact the college on 01962 797 396. I'll read that again. 01962 797 396.
Well, with that promise of spring in the air, that concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return your memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.